sudden onset of weightlessness. Below the crew section was the science module that was designed to conduct experiments for which the International Space Station was not equipped, or that the Department of Defense did not wish to share with the international community. "Heat shield alignment in progress," she heard Commander Dick Siegel say. He was in the seat directly to her left, in an array she jokingly referred to as our pie chart. "Azimuth nominal," Capcom answered. The spacecraft system was fully automated, the exchange simply confirming that both crew and command center were reading the same data. "Deorbit burn in 2 minutes, mark," Commander Siegel said. "Roger that," Capcom replied. It was a surreal moment for the senator, weightless and waiting. With nothing tangible happening and the universe sprawled before her, time did not seem to exist, except for memory. It was like being a fetus. And then everything but the stars went away. For a moment, Senator Mela wondered if one of the crew members had pushed something by accident, but there was no activity that she could hear or see. "Commander," she said into the ominously silent darkness. She heard her voice in the helmet, but not through the audio unit. There was no response, but then everyone was as tucked in as she was, and she would not have heard anything that did not come through the ship communicator. Her helmet afforded very little mobility, but she turned her head very slightly in Siegel's direction. "Commander?" There was no answer. She went immediately to her training, quickly filtering all worries and extraneous thoughts. None of that would help. She wondered if a swarm of micrometeoroids had impacted the Phoenix One and damaged its circuits. "Hello? Capcom?" she said. When there was no response, she repeated the call with greater urgency. "Capcom, do you read?" Save for the hollow sound of her own breath, there was silence. Frustrating at first, and then, despite her best efforts, it became unnerving. She noticed then that the air was growing warm, that she was suddenly straining to breathe. "You have now to fix this," she reminded herself. "Do it. What is your status?" The air was not being refreshed behind her visor. There was no communication, no light, no electronics. There had been a catastrophic failure. Even the backup systems had not clicked in. The senator raised a gloved hand. She touched the right side of her helmet to raise the visor. Its faceplate did not move. That should not be. The suit electronics were not linked to the ship's systems. They should not be non-responsive. Fighting down rising panic, she brought her hands to the base of her neck to manually unlatch the helmet. Just then, she heard muffled, distant voices. "Capcom?" she asked. "Hello?" "No," she thought. Those were her crewmates. They only seemed distant because of the damned helmet. She realized suddenly that she had to remove the gloves first and did so clumsily but swiftly. She left them floating where they were and hurriedly undid the latches that held the helmet to the connective neck ring. She got it off with a combination of tugging and wriggling in the confined space. At once, the disembodied voices became clear. "Batteries are dead," astrophysicist Dr. John Todd said thickly. "How is that possible?" Commander Siegel asked.
"I don't know," Todd admitted. "No single radioactive source could do this."
"Sabotage," said embedded technology scientist Dr. Bart Singh.
"That's the only explanation."
"Save that for later," Siegel interrupted. "Jason, we've got about a minute before the reentry maneuver."
"I'm engaging manual thruster control," said pilot Jason Goodman. "I'll use the angle of the stars to time the burn. We may end up in Iceland, but we'll be down."
Senator Mela knew that the problem was more complex than that. This low, if Goodman did not fire the rockets at exactly the right moment to reduce re-entry to idle velocity, Phoenix One would clip the outer edge of the Earth's atmosphere at 17,500 miles an hour and go skidding off into space. No one spoke after that, and the dwindling air supply made it incumbent to be still and silent. She relaxed back into the seat, trusting Goodman to get them out of this. He had trained for it. She had observed him, marveling at his instincts. If anyone could pull this off. Suddenly, there was a spine-rattling jolt from below. The cabin filled with a yellow-orange glow as the spacecraft's four hydrocarbon-fueled rockets ignited. After the period of deep blackness, the flare was so intense that Senator Mela felt a sharp burst in the back of her head. Through the unexpected movement and light,